Welcome to the BMX News Announcers Tower podcast. I'm Mike Carruth. ProGate has been the official starting system of UCI BMX for many years, and the medals of all four Olympic Games featuring the sport have been decided across one of their starting gates. They are known the world over for innovation, quality, and the unparalleled service of the ProGate guy, Pierce Barker. Word and rumors have been swirling around for the past week or two about the company being under new ownership, under new management, or some type of changes at its headquarters in Rockford, Illinois. So we're going to the man himself for the straight scoop. I'd like to welcome back to the show Pierce Barker III, and joining us as special guests are Justin Miller and Brian T-Bone Wilson, who are a big part of the news we'll be talking about today. Guys, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Mike. Good morning. Good to hear from you. We're pretty excited about what's going on here, and we've spent 20 years, coming to this point where now we can really grow and expand the business around the world. Roger Johns, Ed Doherty, and myself started the company in 2002, and we didn't know how long it was going to last, but we kept working at it and working at it, and here we are 20 years later, Mike, and we're handing the torch off to Brian and Justin.
So we're going to get into a little bit about you guys, Brian, Justin, in a minute, throughout the interview. But Justin, you've been part of the ProGate ecosystem for quite a while as owner of BMX Track Supply. So this is sort of a natural progression for you. I'm going to start with Brian, if I may, and ask Brian, how did you come into the picture? Justin's a natural because he's already been part of the ProGate cast of characters for a while. And so how did you hook up?
Well, Mike, I started racing BMX back in the 80s. And I actually am from Rockford, Illinois, the home of ProGate. And I was away from the sport for a good 35 years. I came back to it about 2.5 years ago when my son started riding a Strider in Cape Coral, Florida, at the track here. And basically got back into the sport, started a couple companies, and we had a mutual friend in Rockford, Illinois that kind of put me and Pierce together. He said, hey, you guys may be able to do some business together. And that's kind of how I came into the picture.
And so prior to that, now, are you the track operator in Cape Coral? Is that your role?
No, that's Nick Jones.
Okay, all right.
Nick Jones and Bill Caldwell run the Cape Coral track. I just simply a rider down here that, took my son out to the track one day. And then next thing you know, I'm back on a bike after 35 years. My wife jumps on a bike. We start traveling around and that's how we got back into the sport.
Yeah, well, that's a great story for sure. So, Justin, why don't you jump in here and tell us a little about, for those that aren't acquainted with BMX Track Supply, and obviously that's a business-to-business enterprise, but why don't you tell us a little about it and your history in the sport as well?
Okay, so I started racing BMX in 1984 in Austin, Minnesota. And Austin, Minnesota was actually the first track in the whole state of Minnesota. And I raced 1984 through 1987, and that was when my local track closed. And I continued to ride my Skyway TA all the way up until I got my driver's license, and it's still hanging on the wall inside my garage. So I, even though BMX had left my community, I still loved BMX and my bike. It was a real big part of my life growing up. Fast forward 20 years later, I moved to Mankato, Minnesota, and my wife and I were driving down the road and they're having a race at the local BMX track. And my oldest son was 6 years old at the time. So we stopped by there, to check it out. And lo and behold, one of his friends was racing. So we got back into it. By the end of that season, I'd bought a cruiser for myself. The next season, I started volunteering at the track and racing, and a couple seasons later, started being the track operator. So when USA BMX decided to conform to the UCI random start, A lot of tracks did not have a four light light that were ABA. They all had a red and a green light. And so I came up with my own way of building a four light light setup that was red, yellow, yellow, green, and actually made instructions for that and posted it on the internet. And USA BMX shared that with the other track operators so they could build their own light. There was a race that we were having where Brad Halen from the ABA had come to my track because they're having a little get together with his stepfather, Jack Doherty. And Brad was up on the hill talking to me about my lights. And he's like, "Oh, it's been great. And there's been a lot of tracks making these things. And, you know, I really appreciate you doing this, but, you know, have you ever thought about just making the lights and selling them? Because a lot of these tracks don't want to make, you know, the stuff themselves, or they don't have the capability." So that kind of planted the seed for BMX Track Supply. So I started working on a better design, and I released the product and launched the website, you know, at the same time. A few months later, Pierce contacted me. Actually, Progate went on the website and ordered a light. And I thought, oh, cool, the Rockford track's going to buy a light. You know, they're one of the, you know, best known tracks in the country. And you know, it's going to be great to have the Rockford track buy a light. And then I looked at the shipping address and I Googled the shipping address and it was Progate. And I'm like, oh, no, they're going to steal my design and all this stuff. And so I'm walking out the door at work and my phone rings. And I answer it, and on the other end, it's Pierce. And he goes, "Do you know who I am?" And I go, "I know exactly who you are." And I was ready to throw down with him. And, you know, we've been, you know, from that moment on, we just fostered a good working relationship and friendship. And we've been working together ever since.
Well, that's great to hear. So, Pierce, what are your plans now? So now that these gentlemen have come into the picture, and are they, you know, working alongside you, or are they going to take the company over, or what's the plan, Pierce?
Well, to add a little more substance to what we're talking about here, Mike, my goals have always been to support the riders and the sport. And I was looking for the right combination of people to do that. And obviously, I didn't realize until a few months ago, but I'm getting to be one of the old timers in the sport. And one of these days, I'd have to stop. So when Brian and Justin and I started talking, it just was a natural to move right in. So they are taking over the company, and I will be kind of, you know, fading out a little bit, but I'm still going to support the riders, the tracks, the people that are here, support some goals, and it'll give me some time to focus more on some projects in the safety arena and engineering stuff that we've done over the years, and give me time to improve some of those things. So that's kind of what I'm going to be doing. I won't do it forever, but I'm going to do it for a long time, and I want everybody to know that I'm still going to be available if you need me.
So I think law firms call it of counsel, right? So that's kind of how you'll be, is you'll sort of be on the speed dial if, you know, I mean, maybe coming up with some, you know, some, like you said, some additional safety innovations or that kind of thing.
Absolutely.
Why don't we ask Justin, in terms of like the product profile of Progate, I'm pretty familiar with it. And so you've got the, you know, the crescent gate, which is like a barrel style gate. I would assume that's a pretty good seller. You've got the straight eight, which is the supercross version, like the version that's approved, used at the Olympic Games and so forth. And is there any idea or any plans that you guys have talked about that you can tell us for changing that product line or adapting it or expanding it? Justin?
There's been a lot of conversation around here about, you know, improvements to be made. And that's a conversation that's always gone on between Pierce and I over the years. You know, we've always done a good job of collaborating with each other on new product ideas, you know, changes to the product, ways to streamline the manufacturing and improvements and that sort of thing. So we do have some things in the works. Not all of it I can necessarily divulge. You know, some of it, you know, is on the gate side of it. Some of it is on the electronics side of it. there's a lot more we can do, you know, with the electronics. And, you know, so for example, you know, we developed the CK gate control a few years back. That's a big improvement over our old control system. And there's a lot more user-friendly features to it. It has a timing output. It's got LEDs that help signal to the operator if there's an issue with the system to help troubleshoot. And we plan to take, you know, things with that control further where, you know, we can add features to that control and it'll have the same connection, same form factor, and we'll just drop right in to existing systems that have that control. But as of right now with the gates, you know, we're trying to just keep the design pretty much the same because it is very tried and true. We might come up with ways to just make the manufacturing faster, easier, be able to respond to customers quicker with how we do things.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's definitely one of the improvements that I think customers might be looking for. And not to say anything about Pierce, because I mean, that is obviously kind of the curse of your success, Pierce, is that there's so much demand. You've got a lot of orders, a nice, healthy backlog. And so the ability for a fresh team to come in and be able to fulfill that demand, is that definitely part. I mean, like, you know, you always think about during World War II, those lines of airplanes down that big plant in here in Chicago. You know, I mean, I kind of picture that almost where there's gates, you know, as far as the eye can see, lined up, ready to ship out. Is that kind of what you all have in mind, Justin? And then we'll go back to Pierce. Brian, I want to bring you in on it as well.
Okay. So there's, it's funny you bring up the big long lines of planes, you know, during World War II. So World War II actually fostered lean manufacturing here in the United States because they had to be able to build ships and airplanes and munitions at a much higher rate and faster rate and more efficiently than they ever had before. So I have a lot of background in lean manufacturing and a lot of experience. And I'm going to be bringing that background and experience to the manufacturing process with what we do so that, you know, we're able to be able to crank these things out and respond to customers, quicker than ever before and, possibly cut down on some of the labor and the movement and on the shop floor and that sort of thing. So I actually have a team of people that are going to be coming into the new shop, which is being moved to the manufacturing is being moved to Mankato, Minnesota. And we're going to set up the shop with lean practices and principles to make our operation as efficient as possible.
So usually when, a partnership comes together, you know, two people of like mind and they want to do something that is great, and it sounds like you guys are teed up to do just that. Brian, what will your roles be? Will you sort of both do the same thing, or will you take part of the business and Justin take another part? Comment on that if you would, Brian.
Well, there's always going to be overlap, but yeah, we see the partnership as kind of two distinct areas. I got a degree in recreation and sports management from the University of Illinois. And I was always involved in, you know, park district events and things growing up playing hockey and racing BMX in Rockford, Illinois. But Justin is definitely heavily vested in the manufacturing side of things. And I'm going to be more in a sales support role. We have some unique ideas on how to help the tracks in the U.S. receive funding, because that's always a big issue with getting a new gate. Just trying to bring some other creative ideas into the mix as far as sales, maintenance, some of the things that I think would improve the product overall and help the TOs, because that's one of the things that you learn real quick is these TOs are not usually paid. They're usually volunteers.
Right.
And they need a lot of support.
Yeah.
And the more support for the TOs out there, I think the better every track can be.
Yeah, well said. I mean, that's definitely, you know, a big challenge. And a new gate is something that, you know, is often for some tracks like the impossible dream. You know, it's a big investment, and it is an investment. But it's one of those things where, like, a restaurant and, you know, like a starred chef has this stove that just isn't holding temperature right, and it's inconsistent. And when he finally gets the new one, boom, you know, it really takes off for him. And I think tracks are a lot like that as far as, you know, getting, you know, a new gate and getting a system. Now, the thing about the ProGate system, and Pierce, I want to come back to you about this. The one thing that our listeners may not know about the ProGate system is that it is a fail-safe system. And that's not just marketing talk, that's real talk. So Pierce, why don't you tell us about, you know, not a long technical discussion, but just what did I mean by that?
Well, Mike, a lot of the things that are out there, when I had some background working with OSHA a long time ago, and when I first saw the sport back in 2002, when I first looked at it, I went, wow, how does this ever get to this point? And so my focus was making a safer system. And for example, with our juniors, you can put your foot under it and it just comes and, you know, it comes down and kisses your foot, but it's not going to cut it off. Now, the big gates you can't do that with, but we've made them quieter. One of the big issues that we have is when you pull the air hose off, on our systems, the gate just stays in position. And so many others, they don't do that. And, you know, you pull the air hose off, or you have an electrical failure and the gate goes down. And there have been countless injuries and race interruptions that are caused by those kinds of things. And so our initial approach was to solve those problems, to make them safer. And that's always been a focus, safer for the kids that are riding. And we don't want anybody hurt. We want a really strong, positive opportunity for everybody to get out there and enjoy it as opposed to be threatened by it. A big one is the noise. Our gates are quieter.
Yeah.
And the noise of a gate slamming down scares a lot of kids. And
it does. It absolutely does. That's one of the biggest things in working with beginners as I do. That's one of the biggest things. And we need to have earplugs that we get on. We have those on site for the little ones. And a lot of the brothers and sisters who are just sitting near the gate. So yeah, definitely. I'm sorry I interrupted you, but wanted to give you a right on there.
One more comment on that. On the noise issues, the first BMX race that I ever went to from an official race was Egg Harbor in New Jersey. And I went up to the starters booth and Bob Tedesco introduced himself and we talked. But I measured the sound level right there and it was the same sound level as a 12-gauge shotgun going off. And I said, we got to fix that. So we did.
Very nice. Yeah, the one thing that you told me years ago, and it really kind of stuck with me, is kind of the guiding principle of any mechanical device that is used in, you know, in a commercial setting is no unauthorized movement. And so like what you just described with, oops, you know, someone kicked the plug out, and that happened at, you know, a race just recently that I was at, and the gate fell, and, you know, it didn't hurt anybody, but it could have if someone, you know, we always also tell our coaches during league and during clinics, don't put your foot in the well, okay? Don't put your foot where the gate falls, because if someone, oops, kicks the power out, you know, your foot, you're going to have one of those aching foots like Fred Flintstone. You know what I'm saying?
If you still have a foot left, Mike.
I was being kind, but yes. Yes, indeed.
I know you were.
So we're going to move on, guys. You know, in terms of the new, you know, the new arrangement and so forth, how does the BMX community at large, like not the track operators or the B2B side of things, but the, you know, the parents and the riders, Brian, why don't you take this one? How do they interact with Progate? Like, how do you, you have the B2B product, which is the product that you sell to tracks. Is there a product that you sell directly to a consumer as well?
Yes. Justin has the BMX track supply, and we sell timers, and you know, we also have the junior gates, the one man gates available. So we'll still be selling those, you know, direct to, you know, riders per se. And that'll be something that we're going to be updating some websites, and, you know, we'll still have the same phone numbers and stuff, but we'll be making some updates on those and kind of getting that organized to get out to people so they know how to get a hold of us.
So Progate Junior is that practice gate. And what I've always liked about it, and in talking with people who actually own them, you know, it really mimics, it's the exact, I think, you know, internally, maybe the actual physical construction is, you know, is more of like a prosumer version, but Justin, maybe you can address this one. Like the electronics and all the cadences and stuff, the timing and everything is the same as you would find at the actual track, correct?
Correct. So the actual microprocessor that we use and the program within that microprocessor that was developed and continues to be developed by Progate is the same between the practice gate and the full 8-person gate. So really we're taking the 8-man gate control electronics and putting them in a smaller, more compact package for, you know, for a single person gate. So when you practice on a Progate Junior, it can exactly mimic the drop of an 8-person Progate. We can match the speed. You can, you know, all the timing is the same. The way the lights blink is exactly the same. So it is a true training tool for practicing gates in comparison to a lot of the other gate offerings out there. Some of the other gate offerings out there are, sometimes I like to refer to them as a novel way to do sprints. They don't actually train you and help you with your gate starts.
Right, right. Yeah. And so that is not a cheap product, but, you know, hey, when you're at that higher level, nothing is cheap. I mean, the travel is expensive and you're going to spend or invest, you know, quite a few ducats on traveling and getting to the races. And so it's the longest ride home when you blow your start and, you know, and you've got I'm sure for a 10-year-old or a 15-year-old or a 55-year-old, it's a long drive home when you blow your start and you've got to ride 16 hours back home to to get back to training again. So it's worth the investment. And I think the resale value of those units is, you know, if in fact you get out of the sport at some point, there's always a market for those on the secondary market, correct?
Correct. And there, yeah, that's one thing I was going to bring up. So I'm glad that you did. The resale is very, very high on them. And, you know, we're able to support those customers with, you know, with parts and service, you know, if they buy one secondhand. So, you know, if somebody buys a Progate single person or 2-person gate and they need support, we're able to help them out. You know, we're here to stay. There's a lot of practice gate companies out there that have come and gone and people are stuck with the dud product. You know, that'll never happen if you buy Progate.
Yeah, definitely. That's good to hear. Well, so I want to move along to the personal side for a second. A couple of personal questions. Pierce, I want to start with you. So the random cadence, the random gate, is that's something that is a Progate like you guys originated that? Is that right?
Absolutely, Mike. We wrote the software in our systems, and it's been copied by others, but it's, you know, a knockoff is a knockoff, and they don't get all the important stuff when they do that. We wrote the performance specifications with UCI, and what's in their rule book is words that came from Progate. And it's important to understand that, and there's a real key point from a safety standpoint. that it says the gate shall drop on the green. So the last tone, the green light, and the gate are all initiated by the same signal, and our competition doesn't always do that. The problem with that is when you get up higher in the performance races around the world, you begin to, if they train on the wrong stuff, they crash coming out of the gate. And it's just like you said, it's a long ride home when you mess up in the beginning. And so we did that. We did that back. UCI had the first random chips for test and evaluation in 2005. And Roger is a software wizard. Most people wouldn't know him, but he is absolutely great at that stuff. And he wrote the software based on the input that I got from riders and from UCI to make this a significant safety improvement for the sport. And we did it. We did it. So it was introduced in August or July, August of 2007, officially in the world, in China.
Wow. That's awesome. And so tell us the story about recording the cadence. That came from you as well. And I understand that there's a funny, you know, because for many years, the ABA cadence was Clayton. And before that, I don't remember who it was, but nonetheless, the current cadence that all of us hear every day, every race, every gate drop was recorded right at the ProGate headquarters in Rockford. Tell us that story.
That is correct. I cast around with UCI, cast around with UCI about who would be very good at this, and we asked Mike Redmond to come out. So I flew Mike out. We sat down in my office. We set a fleet of computers around him and had him say the cadence, the words, over and over and over again. And then Roger took all those voice files and we put it back together in the cadence that you hear today, every day, a million times a day around the world. We have equipment in 45 countries and it's the same cadence everywhere you go. And that's, I think it's cool. And so Mike, I said, Mike, you're going to be the voice of BMX in the world. He said, yep, that's what he wanted to do. And we had a good time doing it.
James Earl Jones was busy that day, I guess, right?
Yeah, he was. He was our second choice, though, Mike.
Right on. So
the best part about the story is I've had Pierce tell me the story in detail, and I've had Mike Redmond tell me the story in detail. And there's a lot of similarities to the story, but there's some differences to the story. And Mike Redmond talked about how he stayed at Pierce's house and in his bedroom in the basement. So I remember I was here to visit on a business trip and was, you know, staying at Pierce's house, and I'm laying in bed trying to fall asleep. And I'm like, man, I'm in the same bed that Mike Redmond laid in when he recorded the voice for the cadence.
The White House has the Lincoln bedroom and Pierce's house has the Redmond bedroom, I guess. So Brian, on your side of things, something really interesting is that you are a poker player and won a bracelet at the World Series of Poker some years ago. That's quite an accomplishment. Can you tell us a little about that experience and how it all came about?
Yeah, so, you know, growing up in Rockford, I was a hockey player in the wintertime and a BMX rider in the summertime. That was my sports, you know, that was my competitive fire. And as I got older, you know, I played some softball and did some stuff, but I never really found that really competitive atmosphere where I felt like I was, you know, up against somebody and giving it my all. So I fell into poker, playing online poker. I won a trip to a little country called Estonia, right outside of Russia, playing online poker. And over there, I met a world-class player named Dave Kokolov, who turned out to be the European Player of the Year and was inducted into the European Poker Hall of Fame. So we became pretty good friends, and I started traveling around the world. went out to the World Series of Poker in 04, won my way into the main event, but didn't win any money. Went back in 05, and, you know, everything kind of lined up for me. I was playing well. I was pretty young in the game, per se. But I ended up winning a bracelet that was broadcast on ESPN. So from about 2004 to, I'd say, 2009, that's all I did, you know, for a living. That's how I supported myself.
Wow, that's exciting.
I played in about 18 different countries, you know, met a lot of people, a lot of great times traveling, a lot of really good friends all over the world, you know, through that, which is ironic now that, you know, Pierce is selling Progate to another Rockford guy.
Yeah.
But yet it's an international company. So I'm already reaching out to people and saying, hey, I'm going to be coming back to Scotland in 2 years for the Worlds.
Right.
I'm not coming to play poker, but I'm coming to represent the Gate company that I purchased with Justin Miller. So it's pretty cool to have all these life experiences kind of coming back into one thing.
So do you think that there are like lessons to be learned from racers from poker? I think that a lot of people misunderstand the fact that it's not necessarily gambling per se. I mean, you are putting money at risk just like you do with any enterprise, but poker itself is definitely a game of skill. And there's no house advantage, quote unquote. So what do you think that, like, some of the, you know, obviously there's tells and there's things that that you could apply to business and to sport that are also inherent in poker?
Mental toughness. It's as easy as that, because if you go play 10 poker tournaments, you're doing well if you make the money in 3 of them. It's almost like being a baseball player. You know, you're gonna strike out 7 out of 10 times. The 3 times you make it into the money, you know you have to make that final table to get a good payday. And you know all the money is really in the top 3. So you have to learn how to take the beats and the ups and downs. And the ups and downs happen per hand sometimes. You can be sitting on top of the world and 3 hands later, you can be out of the tournament. Or 1 hand later. So I think it teaches you mental toughness. I think it teaches you, you know, to prepare for the unknown, I guess you could say. I mean, you know, right now Pierce has a situation where he's got a gate going to China and the shipping is a nightmare. It's stressful. You know, it's stressful to be in these big situations where you're dealing with people all over the world with, you know, the gate of the Olympics. So I think mental toughness is the biggest thing. And when you're a racer, boy, if you're not mentally tough, you're done.
Yeah, right. And there's the element of, like, you know, like psyching up and psyching out your competition, psyching up yourself, psyching out your competition, some trash talking that happens at the table too, right?
Oh yeah. One of my true favorite things about poker was the mental warfare. I mean, you're looking across at this guy and you're saying, how can I get his chips? And you want to know, you know, is this guy an accountant or does he own a bar? Is he a professional player or is he an amateur? All the information that you can gather goes into your thought process and how you may do certain things. So it's definitely a mental game. And in BMX too, I was, you know, down here in Florida, I consider Florida the BMX capital of the world right now. Because you go to a track and there's a Hall of Famer there. And we've got everything going on down here. But a quick story. John Purse up in Sarasota says to me, we trained with him, me and my wife, and even my son, David. And he says to me, don't look at the moto sheet. Why are you going to look at the moto sheet? You're going to be upset because you're in gate 6 and the fast guy's in gate 2. And you're going to beat yourself up for the next 3 hours until you got a race. He's like, just find out what moto you're in. Go up there, be mentally prepared, be mentally ready, and go out there and do the best you can. But if you sit there and worry about who you're racing or what gate you have, you've already defeated yourself. So that's good. Coming from
that's good advice.
One of the best of all time right there.
For sure. So, Justin, back to you for a second. Not in the poker realm, but just in the realm of local BMX racing, one of our favorite topics. Are you still track operator at Mankato, or did you hand the reins over?
I am no longer track operator at Mankato. So my tenure as track operator ended at the beginning of 2014. And but I'm heavily involved in the track still. I still I don't show up on work nights so much anymore, but I'm there for every race. Actually, today I'm traveling, so I'm not going to make it back. I think I didn't miss a race all last year and so far this year. So I'm the local announcer, and I announce at some of the state races. So, yeah, I'm still involved. We actually had a kind of a cool event last weekend that's fairly unique. There's a city about 40 miles down the road from ours, Faribault BMX, that a lot of our local riders go and race at, and a lot of their local riders come to ours and race. And there's actually a bicycle path that goes that 40-mile stretch. And the bicycle path is within like 500 feet of our track. So I had an idea years ago that we should do a race at one of the tracks, and everybody jumps on bikes and rides to the other track and does a race. And we did that last weekend.
Oh, wow. That's cool. That's really cool.
It was quite the adventure. And we plan to make this an annual event, maybe tie it to some sort of fundraiser. So I have a lot of fun helping out down at the track, and it definitely helps keep me connected to BMX on the local level. I tell people all the time, my youngest son is a 16X right now. You know, he's probably got a couple years left, in BMX before he, you know, starts doing the adult life thing. And
the fumes, and, as we always say, the perfumes and the exhaust fumes, right?
Yeah. So he, you know, but I still plan on going to the track and helping out every week and being part of the BMX community forever. I told my wife Wednesday nights are BMX night, and you know, we just got to make sure that we don't have any other plans, because that's where I'm going to be.
Nice. So what do you think is the biggest challenge that faces local tracks? I mean, you talk to a lot of them, and obviously now with ProGate, you are and are one of the big suppliers of glue for the, you know, the track surface. Slurry is a big thing, and I'm not sure how that all fits together, but really from a, you know, from a mom and dad point of view, racers, like what could they do to make things easier on the track operators and make their local program, you know, what it really should be?
So personally, I think one of the biggest challenges is track operator burnout and volunteer burnout. I've noticed just in the 10 years that I've had my business that the tenure of a track operator seems to be getting shorter and shorter. You know, there's some long-term track operators out there, you know, Mark Coates, Jackie, Kyle Oswald, Jake here in Rockford, you know, these folks are, you know, been doing it for years, and they're great at it. And they're fixtures in the BMX community in their town. And they're beginning to be more of the exception than the rule. And, you know, track operators get burnt out very quick, and they leave the sport completely, or they quit being the track operator. And it's hard for a track to really get traction and get moving and get good programs in place, you know, when the track operators are burnt out. And a lot of that, and this is going to be sounding somewhat a little selfish, but at the same time, I think there's a lot of common sense to it. You know, when a track doesn't have the funding or the ability to glue their surface, they're constantly down there working on the track. And if they're at the track, raking and shoveling and filling in ruts and washouts, they're not out promoting the sport, recruiting riders, trying to maintain their rider base. You know, so sometimes the investment is worth it, even when the money, you know, could possibly use for other things. because if those volunteers aren't there anymore because they're burnt out from working on the track, then there's not going to be a facility at all. So I feel somewhat strongly about that. And at the same time, I'm very sympathetic to, you know, the budgets that a lot of tracks have. You know, not every track's got tens of thousands of dollars in the bank. And, you know, so I've done a lot of things over the years to help a lot of tracks out. I've donated equipment. I've borrowed equipment. You know, I spent a lot of time on the phone with tracks. Just, you know, I always offer out, you know, free advice anytime they want it. Just give me a call. If you ever have any questions about something, it doesn't have to have anything to do with the product I'm selling or anything like that. Just if you need, you know, someone to listen and to, you know, tell you how I would handle it, you know, I'm there for them.
Nice. Nice. Pierce, you've talked to a lot of track operators and people who are building tracks throughout the world, just in your role. What would you say is the big difference between a local track here versus in other parts of the world? Like, there's always that Pulp Fiction quote where he's like, you know, they got the same stuff over there in Europe that they had here, but over there it's just a little different. So what are some of the differences, not only in Europe, but just around the world between, you know, the local program here versus a local program somewhere else?
Interesting question, Mike. I've got 3 million air miles behind me with this business and going and seeing people. The problems are the same, and no matter where you go, and the solutions vary from one track to the next. And one of the things that I did, I said to myself, is I will help anybody with anything if they need it to try to get them to a better place. And so I've done that, and I've done it in 45 different languages, and we continue to do that. But you know, it's Paul down in Moline is one of the first guys to implement some of the things that we did. You know, worked with Paul on some stuff, and a track operator in Springfield, Illinois, and you know, we just try to make it better for everybody. It's performance, reliability, safety, longevity. You know, we want the equipment to last, and so I try to help everybody with their specific problems. And interesting, I got my first phone call the other morning at 4:28 from Russia, and I called, you know, Australia and New Zealand in the evening, and Africa in the middle of the day, and Europe in the morning, and it's just kind of interesting. But they all have the same kinds of issues, and so we got to help them solve it. One of the things that I think is out there, Mike, we have a program where you can merge into it. And it's not a formalized program, but, you know, we talk about budgets and that. We've done some, and this is more of a Brian question, but some financing assistance for tracks, okay? You step in with a low end, a low, you know, a not full control system, and then you can migrate that control system into a full gate later on. But you gain a lot of the safety benefits immediately when you install one of the control systems. And it might be interesting, Brian, can you comment on some of those future plans for the how we're going to try to assist tracks in purchasing system?
Yes. So a couple of things that I talked about with Pierce, you know, very early on, and this process has been a 7-8 month process. So this didn't happen overnight. So there was bound to be some rumors and gossip out there because people would see things and hear things. But, you know, coming from a recreation management background, I kind of have an insight with, you know, the way park districts might work or municipalities. So I think there's a lot of things that we as a company can go and assist the track operators and the tracks as far as just understanding the language to help them try to find funds that may be available. For instance, I can use Nick Jones and Cape Coral because it's my home track and I've been around for all the different things, but the city actually bought the gate for them. they wrote the check for it. So there are cities that can do that. There's probably tracks out there that could get money from their cities that have no idea they could get the money. And, you know, the TOs they're not experts in this kind of stuff. They want to go open up the track, make sure the kids are safe and run the races for them. So we want to go in and assist those TOs with, hey, there may be some funding for you out there. We also are working with a couple finance situations where we can, you know, finance a portion of the gates for them in a very easy fashion. And also fundraising. You know, when we go to talk to a TO these days, I want to say to them, hey, you know, where's your experience level? What have you done? What have you not done? Some of these guys are brand new. They have no clue what's going on as far as fundraising or different things. They thought they were just going to get the keys, unlock the gate, and have races. So based on the experience level and the need level, we're going to have multiple different programs to help tracks. Maybe it's just get glue, or it's to get a new ram, or to get a whole new gate system. Whatever it is, we're going to try to find a way to assist them in finding the funds to make it happen.
Yeah, wow, that's great. That's definitely something that tracks could use is assistance with, you know, just making things happen. And like you said, there's, you know, both there's an experience gap, but there's also just a time gap of, oh my gosh, it's insurmountable the amount of work to do inside the gate, let alone go outside the gate and work in the political realm. And no one wants to do that these days, believe me. And so you guys helping out, it really would help out. So we're just about ready to wrap things up, but before we do, I wanted to go around the table one time and just see if there's anything that, you know, I could go on with you guys for hours. And so we'll pick this up at another time, and Pierce, maybe we can bring you back, off the range and you can talk more about what's going on for you, you know, later down the line. That's kind of an inside joke to the listener. Pierce, he's going to be out there and, you know, having fun with the dogs and stuff, right?
Yep, you bet, Mike.
So let's go around the table once, and we'll go around alphabetically. So Pierce, why don't you start on that alphabetically by last name class? So go ahead.
Well, Mike, probably the most important thing that I've thought about over the years is I love what we do, and I think we do it the very, very best. And bringing on Brian and Justin into the new roles and expanding our own capability is going to be a huge improvement for the track operators, for the riders, for the sport, especially in the safety areas. So I'm really excited about that. And I'm excited about the future of what's happening. And as we introduce new equipment and new innovations for the sport, I think that it's just really cool to me to be a part of something this big and to be able to hand it off in a successful way to a really solid team to make it work.
That's really good stuff indeed. Justin, what about you? Final thoughts just on the particular discussion?
Yeah, so, you know, I one of the things I've really thought about, you know, here recently, I had my last day at my day job this past Friday, and I've been in continuous employment, you know, since I was 15 years old. I've never had a day without a real job with a paycheck, and you know, so this is scary and exciting all at the same time. But you know, when I really look at it and I put some perspective to it, and I think about the 6, 7, 8 year old Justin, you know, back in the 1980s on his BMX bike, you know, if that 8-year-old Justin knew what the 44-year-old Justin was doing right now, he would be totally stoked. And what could be better than that?
Yeah, amen to that. And I think that, you know, some of us that are doing this, you know, it's one of those things that, you know, it's the dream job in a lot of ways. And yet, you know, not a lot of people know about BMX racing yet. And so that's, I think, part of a lot of our missions in life is to you know, expand the brand, so to speak. So, Brian, you and your wife just had a new baby, Donovan. So congratulations on the birth. I think it was like a month ago or so. And so, you know, definitely that's something. You guys are Cubs fans, so props for that. Give us a little final thoughts, anything you'd like to say just in closing.
Well, it was a privilege, you know, when Pierce started discussing, you know, bringing me on as part of the new ownership. So I knew with his passion for safety and what he had done in the sport over 20 years, you know, we really had a solid foundation to work off of. And that's what really interested me about this. And I've got a 5-year-old son, David, and our newborn, Donovan. You know, my wife is riding. We are a true BMX family. We travel. I couldn't be happier. It's something that I really didn't travel when I was a kid racing. But, you know, the opportunity to go out there and help tracks and help the sport, to me, to really do something, you know, worthwhile. Growing up, my dad was president of the hockey club, and he did all the fundraising for the Rockford Hockey Club in Rockford. And I guess maybe that's where it kind of comes from with me. But we want to go out there, provide a great product, which we already have, but just get it to more people and help the TOs, the tracks, the riders, just make the sport better. It's a privilege to be in this situation and I'm in with ProGate, and it's going to be a lot of fun.
Well, usually in these shows and in this kind of a circumstance, I'd leave it with the guest as the, you know, as the final word. But I do want to just add in a brief personal note. Pierce, you know, we've worked, you know, very closely together, just both geographically and just in business for, you know, for many, many years. And you've been a huge supporter and fan and friend, really, of myself and of BMX News and what we do here for all that time. And we just want to thank you for all that. And also just thank you for the support and the brain power that you've brought to the sport. You know, track operators are a breed apart, certainly, and they need all the help they can get. And I think that whether they have a ProGate system or not, they've always known that they could call upon you for advice in the middle of the night, sometimes our time. And so once again, I know you're not stepping off the stage permanently, but just wanted to take this opportunity to say thank you. And to the guys coming in, you know, Justin and Brian, you know, you got yourselves a heck of a company here and a heck of a product line. I know you know that. And I wish you all the best and anything we can do to support you in that mission. We're there for you.
We appreciate that, Mike.
Definitely.
Thank you, Mike.
Yeah, for sure. Well, there's no question that it's an exciting time in ProGate land. And with the 2021 Grands coming up in about a month or so, we'll be stopping by the ProGate pit, the service gate, seeing guys ripping gates out there. Get your punch cards early to see the latest and greatest that they have to offer at the greatest race on earth. So be sure to stop by there yourselves. And so that's all the time we have for today, for today's show. For Pierce Barker, Justin Miller, and Brian Wilson, I'm Mike Carruth. Thanks so much for joining us on this episode of Announcer's Tower.